Are you professor or Mr. Schwichtenberg? President. Thank you very much for being with us today. I think as we explained, the way we'll do this is we'll turn it back to you for some opening comments on about yourself and why you're seeking this Board of Regents position. 5 minutes or so on that, and then we will go around the table and have questions for you, and then hopefully turn it back to you at the end for some closing comments, and hopefully within 45 minutes. So,
very fine.
So we'll turn it back to you. Welcome.
Thank you. My name is Donovan Schwichtenberg. It's a pleasure to be here, and I thank you for the opportunity to interview for what I consider a very important position for the state of Minnesota. My education career started at Minneapolis Central, where I was a business teacher. I had a number of other teaching assignments in Minneapolis before going into administration and serving as a principal at a number of schools, including Marshall University High School, which was the result of a merger between the Lab School at the University of Minnesota and Minneapolis Marshall. When I came to St. Paul, I was hired to come over and solve some problems for them, and I became the head of the college as a result of a national search. In 1995, the community colleges and technical colleges were merged together, and we saw a need to try to attempt a mission change for the college, which we fulfilled. And we were the first technical college to make that change, followed by many other technical colleges in the state of Minnesota. Our reason for doing that was, number one, to increase the image of vocational education in the eyes of parents, and secondly, to provide an educational opportunity for students who were interested in something other than vocational education, but did not have the adequate resources to be able to attend the many fine schools in the St. Paul and Minneapolis area. To that end, we made a number of changes which required working with a large number of people in various categories and groups to obtain permission to make the mission change. Along the way, we changed a lot of our programs. We worked with the four-year colleges to gain transfer rights, transfer agreements with the four universities, and the University of Minnesota was one of the top universities in the area that assisted us and honored our credits. Before that time, our credits were not transferable. We also made major changes in the renovation of the building, and we also sought out support for our various endeavors from other parts of the community. We achieved the change and became a community technical college, and the result was in a 10-year period of time, we had a 70% increase in enrollment and a major increase in the numbers and percentages of female and students of color. And that allowed us to even grow further as far as our curriculum was concerned and develop more ladders of success for students so that when you came to the two-year college, if you wanted to, you could transfer to the four-year college and your credits would be transferable. And we obtained the agreements in writing from the various colleges. And when students came to school, if they said, we are intending to go for a four-year degree, we had transfer specialists that sat down with them right away to make sure that they knew what courses were transferable, which ones weren't, so they were adequately prepared to transfer to the four-year college and also be able to save some money because they didn't take courses that were not worthwhile. We also developed a program called Power of You with two other colleges, and this was a program to allow students to go to college free, and the Power of You program is still in existence today, and hundreds of students have been able to come through St. Paul College, Minneapolis College, and Metro State University because of that program. St. Paul College operated as a shared governance model with faculty. It was very productive, and we achieved many of our goals because of the cooperation. Besides the shared governance model, I also maintained a community advisory group, which was made up of a number of different people from the community, about 20 people from different groups, because we recognize the need for support at a broad base if we were going to move the college forward. So we had representatives from the University of Minnesota, we had representatives from the City Council, St. Paul Schools, the labor unions, the teachers, support staff, students, many other groups to help take our message through. And it was very important because at the last minute, as we tried to move to a new model, a new governance model, new mission, we stalled. And the advisory group came through and saved us at the last minute so we could achieve the needs that were necessary to help move the program forthright and to allow more opportunities for St. Paul students. Now St. Paul students can come to the two-year college and they can gain skills to allow them to get jobs, or they can transfer to many four-year colleges and therefore save money for themselves and also time. But the most important thing was this allowed us to bring the expectations of many St. Paul and St. Paul area students, bring their expectations up. They could go to college too. And we believe that we had come up with an idea to allow many more students to participate in what I would call the American dream. As far as leadership opportunities that I have done along the years in Minneapolis, I was elected president of the Minneapolis Association of Secondary School Principals. I was the president of the Minneapolis Principals Forum. And when I came to St. Paul, I was the president of the Technical College President's Association. I also served at many committees that MinSCU had related to the advancing of our education and working with the governance board through the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities system. My interest in serving on this board as a regent is strictly related to service, and was prompted by an editorial that was in the paper maybe about a month ago, and I think it was written by the chairperson here today. And that didn't give me a guilt complex, but it did remind me of the need for service, and those who receive should step up to the plate and give a little bit. I'm a graduate of the University of Minnesota. My wife is a graduate of the University of Minnesota, and we are very pleased this spring to have my son be a graduate of the University of Minnesota. So I have received from the University of Minnesota. I've also been in public education, and therefore I'm looking to have an opportunity to serve if that is the pleasure of this group. So thank you.
Thank you. I will start off questions with one about the University of Minnesota's land grant mission. The University is of Minnesota is obviously our state's land-grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well, I think that was a result of the Morrill Act about 1851 that was passed, and that gave, I think, 30,000 acres of land to many states to be able to finance educational systems. I was always surprised that New York decided to take their land in Wisconsin and built the educational system in New York based on property in Wisconsin. That's just an aside. But the land grant institution is an opportunity for all the citizens of Minnesota to gain an education in various areas, including agriculture, which is an interest of mine, and be able to advance their skills to allow them to be employed. It also is important as the research institution, which is makes it different from all the other colleges in the state of Minnesota. About a year ago, a friend of mine's grandson was injured in an accident and went to the hospital, and they could not do anything for him there. But they said, if you can get to the University of Minnesota in 6 hours, they can save his eye. And they did. I think also, if we look at what the University of Minnesota has done, you have the great invention of the apple. That helped make Minnesota famous. And you also have spawned an industry of vineyards and wineries in the state of Minnesota because of the advances made by the University of Minnesota.
Thank you. Council members, questions? names first. Vice Chair Taylor.
Donovan, you and I have just met and shared the fact that we both know the now departed Howard Guthman. You mentioned that when you were president at St. Paul College, Howard was the chair of your foundation board. Is that a correct recollection?
Right. Howard Guthman not only was the chair of the foundation board, but he was responsible for starting our foundation and served for many years, and it was my pleasure to be an ex officio member of that group.
Okay. So you were in the capacity of president. Now you're interviewing for the possibility of becoming a member of the Board of Regents. So in the philanthropy alternate revenue streams, what's the role in your mind between the board and the president and the foundation?
Well, the president is chosen to carry out the policies of the board. And I know a major part of the University of Minnesota is raising funds for the various groups. At St. Paul College, it was a newer foundation, but I think our biggest gift was $3 million from Rolex that allowed us to operate a special program. But there needs to be a close relationship between board members and also a recognition of the need for identifying outside funds, because as you know, the state of Minnesota does not pay as much as everybody would like, and I think one of the roles of the Board of Regents is to ensure that the university has adequate funding. Now, I've never been able to determine exactly who can determine what the adequate funding is, but they're supposed to ensure that. So there needs to be not only a support for policies and enrollment at the University of Minnesota, but the raising of funds. And at some points along the way, our Board of Regent members are associated with that endeavor.
Council Member Menon.
So an important aspect of what you'll be doing if you are appointed to the Board of Regents would be crisis management. The University of Minnesota has dealt with a number of crises over the last few years, so I want to know what you think are the most crucial aspects of crisis management and how that relates to how that should be executed by a collaborative board.
Well, crisis management is always a problem because that's dealing with the things you didn't expect to have arise, and they can arise at any time. There needs to be a plan as to what is being done when you have a crisis. And you also need to do it in a timely manner, and also need to make sure that you represent all parts or all people who were involved with the crises, whether it is the person who caused the crises or the person who is a victim of the crises, whatever it may be. And crises can come in many forms, from economic crises, which are not as needing as attention as quickly as some of the other things that I see that's involved with athletics and sex harassment and that type of situation.
Thank you. Council Member Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Schnuchenberg. The Twin Cities is a very diverse metropolis, yet our state is one of the worst in terms of racial equity. What role do you see the university playing in transforming our state into a more equitable environment so that everybody has an opportunity to succeed?
Well, I think that all revolves around leadership, and in my career, almost all of my career has been dealing with improving equity in the public schools that I was in and also the college, and we have made sure that we show the results. University of Minnesota also has done many good things related to recognizing diversity and also having programs that will improve the service to all members of the community, because it's important that everybody has an equal right to an education. And anytime we have any group or individuals who do not have an equal right, it produces inequality for all of the rest of us. I think also that we need to make sure that not only are we talking about students who who are going to make sure they have an opportunity for education, no matter what their race, creed, or color. But also we provide models in front of them. As I said to some of my white colleagues in the college, I'd say, no, you're a great administrator. You do wonderful things. But when people walk into the school who look different than you, you know, it's not as welcoming as they see people who look like them. So we can't have an all-male staff, an all-white staff, an all-black staff, or all of anything. We need to make sure we have representation of all of the groups that we serve, and also that we have procedures and policies that make sure that everybody, including the people of color, females, or whatever group is underrepresented, is truly represented in that particular environment.
Councilmember Carlson.
In light of that answer, I'm going to change what my question is on the fly.
I hope that's good. An easier question.
No, I'm very, very serious. At this moment in time, there are 8 men on the Board of Regents. We have a chance to send 4 names forth, either people that are reapplying or new people. This is a board greatly disadvantaged in gender and diversity. What will you think if you are not selected, because you sound like you are a very good candidate?
Well, see, I was a very good candidate, means I'm not going to get the position.
No! No, you've got to know I ask the tough questions. So, no, I'm serious with you. I'm very serious.
I don't mean to be frivolous in my answer also, but as I said, it's important to have representation of the various groups, and it's quality representation. We should not have reputation just because we're seeking a person who is whatever you want to identify. However, there are always qualified candidates, whether they be female, people of color, and they should be sought out, and I assume you have sought them out, and I assume some of them are going to be interviewed. And if you have an all-white group, and I'm a white person, and I'm the person who's going to be selected, and there's a minority person, you should put them in front of me. It's important to have a representative group.
I'm very touched by your answer. Thank you.
Additional
now
questions?
I've given up the position, I can leave.
No!
Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The legislature this year will be building a biennium budget. And part of that budget includes allocation of dollars to the University of Minnesota. If you were a legislature, how would you evaluate the performance of the university?
Related to budget?
Yeah. Because budget is something we're going to be making a decision on. We're going to be investing in the university. How do we know the university is doing a good job? What in your mind are some of those maybe metrics that are important that the legislature should be looking at, and maybe regents should be looking at, to indicate, are we doing a good job? Are we fulfilling our mission?
I think you have to look at the dollars expended. I think your budget's almost $4 billion. My budget at St. Paul College was $40 million. So as you can see, there's a great disparity in the amounts of money that we're dealing with. Well, you know, what is your bang for the buck, so to speak? How many students are going to college? How many are graduating? How many are getting jobs, if that's what their goal was? What are the salaries that they are getting? I'm a great believer in longitudinal studies, where we look across the board and we don't look at something, just what happened today. We want to know what happened to the people. And it's important to know what the track record of these individuals are. Also, and I think we need more in education, we need to look inwards at ourselves and what we are doing. Are we making sure that the legislature of the state of Minnesota gets the best bang for the buck? And when I came to St. Paul, one of the things that we did is we redirected dollars. And we redirected dollars where they were needed, and also made sure that that way we were able to serve more students than we had previously. I would also look at the enrollment where it's coming from. I think in Minnesota, there was an article in the paper maybe a month or two ago, and one of the concerns expressed was the number of people who leave Minnesota and get education elsewhere. And like that was a bad thing. Well, it's a good thing because these students are going to get an education. But one of the reasons they're leaving is they could not get admitted to Minnesota schools. And I know that some of the students had tried to get admission to the University of Minnesota. And some of those programs had room in those classes. I don't know why they were not taken, but again, that's an opportunity on the business side for revenue for the college that was bypassed for some unknown reason. But I think one of the problems in the legislature has always been, even from the Minskew side, we would come to the legislature and ask for more money, and the legislature would say, you know, we gave you more money. You've got more money than you've ever got before. And that was on that side. On the other side, on the college side, we'd say, but we're serving more students than we've ever served before. And that was always kind of a rub between the legislature and the individual schools. But the bottom line is, I think the legislature has to look at the dollars that you've given, and do you feel you're getting the best bang for the buck? I think the things that I pointed out are all good questions to ask. What's happening to the students that are graduating, and are we serving all the students we could serve in the state of Minnesota? And do we have a service mentality for our students? Some of the students need some extra help to be able to attain their dreams. Do we have programs that are going to allow for that? And if I was at the legislative level, I'd be asking, how are you serving students who may need extra assistance, whether it's economic or whether it's psychological support or student services type of support that's needed?
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. More of a specific question. The university's budget is significantly involved in the production from the health sciences. In fact, the medical school produces like 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. The ranking of this medical school nationally a couple decades ago was consistently in the top 10 in the country. Now it's in the mid-30s, maybe, depending on where you read this. I'd like to have your views or opinion on how do they improve that standing in a professional school. And there's probably other examples, but specific to this one.
I wasn't aware of that particular statistic. I know that in the United States, I think University of Minnesota is number 6 in the size of schools. But what is the reputation of the individual areas? And a key thing is who the instructors are. And the bottom line for any educational program is your instructional staff. What are the kinds of people that you're attracting? And you have leaders who are consistently able to provide the necessary education that's going to allow these students to gain the skills they need. As to why their ranking is lower, I would not know that without investigating that a little bit further and asking for more details, but that is unfortunate to have that slippage, especially in light of the fact that University of Minnesota produces many people who are doctors who serve the state of Minnesota. That would be maybe a question that I would ask for the legislative view also. What about some of these schools? On the other side, there are some schools that do not have full enrollment and sacrifice their revenue because they believe that it's important to keep the image up. And I think that should be examined and making sure, again, that we're serving the people who are needing service in the state of Minnesota and also providing the people who are employing these individuals. A key thing goes back to what I mentioned earlier when you asked the question about things to look at. It's a question of who the students are, what the jobs they're getting, where they're getting them at, what's the salary. Those things are important. But the only thing I would respond to your question is we need to look at, do we have the most outstanding faculty? And what is it, if we don't, what is the reason we're not attracting the individuals necessary to achieve your interest.
Just a probe.
Yep.
What are those colleges without capacity that aren't filling capacity to try to keep their reputation up?
Well, that's a difficult question and probably one I probably wish I wouldn't have brought up now. I don't want to identify all of them, but I would say the School of Law is one of them, and that your enrollment is not where it should be. And one of the reasons is because we do not have people who are as skilled as they should be who are applying to the school. But these same students are going out into other colleges and graduating and starting at high salaries. In fact, in some cases, the law school takes transfer students. They take transfer students who applied originally and could not get into the law school. They take them later as transfer students. I'm not sure how that fits into how you maintain you're the 20th top law student in the United States. But the bottom line is, I think we need to examine why we're giving up that revenue, and the students that we are not allowing to enter go on and graduate from other schools and get top jobs. And I think that's something that's worth looking at.
Additional questions? Councilman Burhich.
Thank you. This is just the first step in a kind of a longer process as we look at getting people on to the Board of Regents. So come Friday of this week, we'll be making our recommendations that will go on to the joint House and Senate Higher Ed Committees and then go on to the full convention. For those that have been successful in the past, it almost becomes a almost full-time job between now and when that convention takes place, getting out to try to meet with the majority of 201 legislators to make sure that they know who you are and support you in your candidacy. Is that something that you've thought through, kind of how you'll go about reaching out and connecting with those legislators?
I know that is not something I had thought about, and that was a requirement that I was not aware of. But I have noticed it a few days ago, and that's obviously an obligation I need to meet if I'm going to continue my candidacy for this position. And the process would be to try to get as many individual contacts that you can. When I was at St. Paul College, we had many contacts with the legislature, especially in bonding years, because as a system, we all supported the bonding bill that was established by the system. And one of the requirements, and that we all were happy to do, was to meet individually with many legislators to discuss the system plan for the bonding bill, and then also if our individual schools were in it, to advocate for our individual interest. So I'm well aware of meeting with legislators and going through that process of presenting your ideas and also listening to their needs.
Thank you. Oh, Council Member, yeah, Vice Chair Madsen.
So you've given us an overview of your work on MNSCU. And we'd like to hear a little bit about how you think MNSCU and the University of Minnesota could work together to help educate the students in the state of Minnesota.
I think that there is already more cooperation in the past few years between MNSCU and the University of Minnesota than has been in the past. Usually when you try to get funding, unfortunately too many times it's head on between MNSCU and the University of Minnesota. They spend too much time criticizing each other and not enough time talking about the values of each individual system. I think that the University of Minnesota, by allowing the transfer of credits, has been a big step forward to helping MNSCU and also help MNSCU's enrollment, because students can now attend the MNSCU colleges at a reasonable rate, and the transfer credits go on to the University of Minnesota. And I know when I originally made the move to change the mission statement of St. Paul College, Many of my colleagues did not support that issue because they felt that there's only so many students, and therefore I would detract from the enrollment of their schools. They said, no, when somebody moves forward, and they're allowed to move forward, everybody moves forward. And then held out, the enrollment increased in all of the schools. And the bottom line is, what do we need to ensure the success of so many students to allow them to be able to gain skills, to gain employment? We have too many people who are underpaid. There are many more students who need to be in college than are in college. And the expenditure of not going to college, or at least not getting some skills education, is very drastic for our economy. I think in Minneapolis, St. Paul area, you need over $20 an hour to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Now, we have many students who are not going on to college, whether it's Minsky or the University of Minnesota, who need to be because they can't even afford that type of living. And then as parents, you know, we see many more students living in our basements probably.
Additional questions? All right, I think we are ready for any closing comments you may have.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to interview, and as I said, my intention is to offer service. I don't have any orders for being on the Board of Regents. I think that my work ethic, I've worked since I was 8 years of age. I think my experience in education, and I think also my experience outside education would be helpful to the Board of Regents. I think I've traveled a great deal in many countries, and also recognize that we have a wonderful thing in the United States, and we need to do all we can to maintain our edge, and one of those is through education. And if we don't, we're going to slip and be more like those countries than others. And also, I note that it reminds me of all the people who did not have what we have in other countries, but also right here in the United States. And education is the track to success that almost everybody can achieve if we get them on the track. I just think we need to do more to get more people involved and to assure that they are on a track to success and not a track to oblivion. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming in and for your interest.